This week, Hoosier legislators began what some have characterized as a 10-week sprint. This year's so-called short session might end up being more of an Olympic decathlon, however, as members scramble to address issues as wide-ranging as alcohol sales, workforce development, firearms regulation, and the opioid crisis. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and this is Indiana Lawmakers. Each week between now and mid-March, we'll do our best to let you know what's happening in the General Assembly and, more importantly, tell you what it means for you and your family. In a moment, I'll be joined by the General Assembly's all-important caucus leadership, so don't go away. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue researcher Phil Owens is creating new ways to map soil functions, improve plant growth, and increase crop yields, leading through innovation and job creation. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.
It's our tradition to kick off each season of Indiana Lawmakers with the General Assembly's caucus leaders. Although the four people joining me this week approach lawmaking from different perspectives and obviously from different parties, they're united, based on what I've seen, by a passion for public service and by a deep-seated commitment to advancing the state of Indiana. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, that they won't disagree early and often in the coming weeks, and maybe, just maybe, even in the next 25 minutes. Here to offer their take on the 2018 session, our House Speaker Brian Bosma, an Indianapolis Republican, House Minority Leader Terry Gooden, an Austin Democrat, Senate President Pro Tem David Long, a Fort Wayne Republican, and Senate Minority Leader Tim Landon, an Anderson Democrat. Thank you for continuing what has become quite a tradition here. Now, even though you're familiar faces to people who watch this show and people who hang out at the State House, we do have a change in the lineup in that we have Terry Gooden here. Scott Pelath in recent years was sitting in that seat. And he, of course, stepped down from his leadership post late last year, and you won the prize.
Right, John. They moved me up from the bottom of the batting order. I kind of moved up in the lineup.
How does this change the way you approach the session?
You know, I don't think it changes the way I approach the session. I just have to have a bigger outlook to try to remember to take in everyone else's views as members of the caucus.
Well, that's the thing that some people had talked about was that, you know, maybe he's too conservative. Southern Indiana kind of Democrat may not be the same as the majority of your minority caucus.
Well, I think just because you take on the leadership role, you don't necessarily shed your own values. We just have to be aware of those other values that are around you.
So you'll be listening to those folks.
Absolutely.
And we also have, certainly David Long has not changed. We're glad you're here, certainly. But you've lost in your caucus some significant fiscal policy institutional wisdom, memory, leadership, I guess it's wisdom or memory, depending on how you look at it, but both with the departures of Luke Kenley, Senator Luke Kenley, and then Brant Hirschman, who were in charge of two committees that were front and center in the budget debate with tax and fiscal policy and certainly with appropriations. Well, how does that change the dynamic?
Well, you know, they're going to be hard to replace, obviously, just because of the talent that, you know, we've lost there. Luke and Brant were to the really legendary senators, I think, that I've been around during my 22 years in the Senate now. But, you know, as de Gaulle said, the cemeteries are full of indispensable men, right? We are all replaceable.
Right.
It happens every 2 to 4 years. Some members move on, and it'll happen to all of us in this room. We have a lot of capable people on our bench, and, you know, Senator Bray has stepped into the majority floor leader's job, Senator Mishler in the appropriations job, and Senator Travis Holdman in the tax and fiscal policy job. And, you know, they're ready for the job, and they'll do a great work.
So we'll visit them at that cemetery filled with...
That's a great quote, but a horrible thought.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, we might have a very long caucus. Well, they're not there to talk to you anymore anyway, so I guess it doesn't matter. The fact that this isn't a budget session, though, that wouldn't come into play as much, although money is always going to be an issue, and it will be this session. I mean, is that that's not necessarily on anybody's agenda, large allocations, but there will be some tweaking around the edges.
Absolutely. I suppose the one issue that we might need to look at in terms of budget, historically we've never opened up the budget, you know,
right,
in a short session, at least during the time that I've been here. But, you know, we've got an opioid crisis, and a lot of that, I think, goes back to the resources that are necessary to combat that, and we simply don't have those resources right now. So there could be a debate over whether you would do something on a limited basis to look at that. But, you know, the real change in terms of the personnel on the Senate Republican side, from my perspective as the minority leader, we have to work. We do work with the members of the opposite party. We have to get anything accomplished. It's really getting used to the personal style of somebody new. But these are people that we have worked with in the past, you know, Ryan Mishler and Rod Bray. So good people. So I don't really.
I thought you meant Terry Gooden.
Well, Terry Gooden, of course. Right. You know, I congratulate him and look forward to working with him on our mutual joint interest. But I think there's lots of opportunity to work with everybody to accomplish some good things in this short session, really.
Well, the opioid crisis is one issue that seems to be atop most everybody's list in terms of the formal caucus agendas. Is that a fair assessment? And might it be that precedent would be set with additional budget allocations of the type that Senator Lanin has described?
So we put a lot of money toward the opioid fight in this last budget, in the current budget. So I'm not certain. I get the point that, you know, more money could be needed. I'm not sure more money above that's in the budget today is needed. There is one issue that I think is probably fairly indispensable on the budget, and that is the nearly $12 million shortfall for local school appropriations. And we're going to announce today that we are moving House Bill 1001 that will fully fund the school funding formula from existing funds. And that's an important one we shouldn't lose sight of.
And that was basically a miscalculation in terms of the dollars that went to some of the districts.
It's happened before. It's all an estimate. How many kids are going to be in our public schools? I tell my local schools, this is great news, 6,000 more families choosing traditional public schools. We have maximum choice for schools here in Indiana, and 6,000 families have selected their local traditional public schools, and that's great news.
Now, I'm guessing the folks sitting here, for those listening on radio to my right, who happen to be on the left politically, I guess, or more so, would probably agree with that. Maybe the friction would come from some in the Senate who don't want to open, or is not the case. This will go through relatively easily.
I think Senator Lanin's point is well taken, which is the resources. Really, you could spend the entire state treasury on this.
And the opioid issue.
Yeah. And it's really such a troubling, difficult nut to crack here. And it's a national problem. Indiana is one of 50 states facing similar issues. But the depth of the crisis is what's so troubling to us. And there are things we can't affect, some things we can. I know the governor's all in. He has put a drug czar in his office specifically for this reason. We're allocating an unprecedented amount of funds toward it. But, you know, as much as we put in, there's always something else. And we're struggling with it. As far as the issue with the school funding, I agree with the speaker. We'll take care. We have a bill of our own. It doesn't matter which one moves. It's the same idea. We're going to backfill the dollars. But it really is good news in the sense that it's a guess how many kids will be going into whether it's traditional schools or into choice schools. There are a lot more going into public schools this year than the choice schools. And so we'll shift that money we were holding back. Right into, I think, seamlessly into that situation.
I want to talk about the opioid. I think we need to focus a little more.
Because I think it's safe to say now that budgetary plug in that gap will sail through.
Right,
so let's get back to the issue. I think
we really need to focus maybe more on the front end of the opioid crisis, maybe instead of the result of that. And I think as we move forward, the resources that are in the budget probably need to be front loaded on that side to try to prevent opioid addiction, opioid use, rather than treating the result of that.
So, is there friction, though? I mean, there's this, it seems to surface every so often. Is this a treatment issue? Is it a medical issue? Or is it, you hear some say, it's just a matter of harsher sentencing. It's a matter of, you know, we're really going to crack down. I mean, no. Tim Lana, what do you...
Well, I don't know how many times we have to lose the war on drugs. And we can't lock everybody up and solve this problem. From my perspective, opioid addiction is addiction, and addiction is a illness, and you have to have sufficient resources for treatment, for prevention in the beginning. There is a reason. There's a root cause. I don't quite understand it, why people choose to indulge in that type of addiction, but nonetheless, it's there, and we need to treat it as an illness, and that calls for resources. So, you know, another issue that's resulted from the opioid, a crisis that's resulted here, has to do with the children that get caught up in this whole situation, and we really do have a crisis right now with the DCS.
You guys are providing all the segues for me.
Yeah,
I can
we have limited time here. We have limited time in the session, too. And I raised yesterday on the floor, and David spoke very eloquently from his perspective on this, too. We need to address the issues that were raised by the former director, who was held in high esteem, and is a person that we need to pay attention to. And so I'm hoping
this was Mary Beth Bonaventura,
yes,
who had
Judge
served since 2013, who left in December, saying that there were problems that might, in her estimation, result in the death of a child.
That children were systemically at risk, and that is something that, as the General Assembly, we cannot leave session without having a sense of confidence that children are not at risk in the state.
Well, let's get the other side of that because
this is an important issue.
Yes,
actually,
right.
We all agree on that. So yesterday, the governor announced that he has hired the leading assessment consulting firm for child services.
Out of Alabama, this is a firm that's done 20 states
in the last 2 or 3 years, and they're doing a top-to-bottom review. There are some there's a systemic problem because there were some startling statistics that we talked about yesterday. We spend more on child welfare than Ohio and Illinois combined. We have more children in our welfare system than Ohio and Illinois combined, and these states are twice our size. We spend almost double per child all of our surrounding states. So there is an issue.
And could the opioid crisis, well, that's maybe
well, they've got an opioid crisis in Ohio and Illinois and Michigan and Kentucky as well. So it's something beyond that. I think we all want to get to the bottom of it. I announced yesterday, and I consulted with the vice chair of Legislative Council. It switches every year. And I told Representative Gooden, and I'll tell Tim now, as soon as this report is completed, which probably will be post-legislative session, we will convene a Legislative Council meeting specifically for the purpose of receiving their report, mm-hmm. questioning the experts, so we can all address this. It's an extremely important function of state government.
And I think the target for completion of that report is April. So unless you
all... Spring is what we heard.
So unless there's some suggestion, maybe you're breaking news here with the possibility of a special session that would carry us into... I'm kidding, of course.
Yes.
I think I'm kidding.
State the...
But I mean, is April... Why is that not soon enough? If you've heard the commitment from your Republican counterparts in leadership roles,
I think April is soon enough if the investigation is done thoroughly,
right.
And I think if it's going
to
be.
You in your remarks to the chamber, you wanted an independent review that would be done by the legislature,
and not necessarily independent, but in conjunction with, in coordination with the governor's office. And I still intend to reach out to the governor and ask him to make the legislature a part of. Give them the legislature a role in trying to figure out how do we fix DCS. So as we move forward, that the legislature has to play a role in that. And I think my colleagues probably agree with that. As an equal branch of government, the legislature has to be involved.
It just seems to me that we don't have to wait upon this group to find out answers as to what was the former director talking about when she said that her hands were being tied, that there's systemic problems within the child protective system right now that put children at risk. If there ever was an emergency situation for the representatives of the people to deal with in a short session, this is it. And so I'm glad that the governor has taken this action. I look forward to this report by these experts. But quite frankly, I don't buy the idea that as the General Assembly, somehow this is beyond our scope or our capability to get answers to right now. We deserve answers.
Respond
right
to
now.
That. Is that a valid point?
Well, I understand the concern. It is a major concern, and it's a here and now issue for us. Here's the problem. As I said yesterday on the floor, I've served under 5 governors, 22 years in the legislature, 22 sessions, and every year there's problems with the child services in the state, one thing or another. Typically, it's caseworkers. And as this opiate crisis starts to, snowball as it has, it has caused even more stress in the caseworker area, and that's where the biggest problem is. You can't keep a caseworker, which takes 3 months to train a person, for even a year on average. At least half of them drop out. It's such a tough job. It's miserable. It doesn't matter how much you pay these individuals. So this is a continuing conundrum for all of us, okay? And it never seems to end. It's just compounded by the opiate crisis. That being said, I do think this is a deep dive I haven't seen before from the administration. There are problems that go back all the way to the O'Bannon days. There are problems that go back to the days when Jim Payne was running the operation. There are individuals in there that may have to, their management styles may need to be reviewed. But most importantly, the caseworker issue is the one we have to figure out. And I think there are some solutions there. I look forward to the end of the report and hearing that. We will be a part of that, as the speaker suggested. We'll take what they tell us and try to work hand in hand with the administration. But I don't think the legislature should be doing an independent investigation on its own. I think we have to let this thing play out and see if finally an administration can finally get this problem solved.
And, John, we also have to be prudent in the investigation part as well. I mean, we want to make sure the investigation is done correctly, and it's got to be done prudently.
Right.
With that, we intend to be partners with the governor, and he at this point has not said that he won't allow the legislature to be a part of that. We're going to call him on that, and we think we need to be a part of that. So that's going to be a part of the conversation as we dive into this the next couple of weeks.
And the reality of the timing here is if there was some legislative solution to this, which I don't believe is the issue, it would have to happen in the next 4 weeks. It would have to happen past one House in the next 4 weeks. And there's just not time to do that. So I think the governor has really taken a prudent approach. I had the same concern that you two expressed, I know you did too, David, about this being the most vulnerable of those that we are elected to protect.
Yeah.
I think the governor's done everything prudent here to bring in the
right folks. Well, as we move forward,
right,
just as Tim said, there are some things we can fix. And obviously those things that have been pointed out that there are a problem, we can go ahead and make movement on that.
Well, yeah.
Until we get the information and we can dig deeper into the well, then that's the...
I think we can get answers, too. We should get answers as to what did the director mean when she said her hands were being tied. And she was pointing to this administration and people within this administration that were doing that. Now we've got this administration who's saying, well, we're going to bring in this outside, you know, entity to get answers. Well, are they going to get answers to that? And I don't think those are hard of questions to get answers to, and we need answers to that. Because if the director wasn't allowed to do her job, that's a real problem.
I think it goes right back to the fiscal issues that the speaker was talking about, though, and then the questions about why are we spending twice as much per child and have twice as many kids in the welfare system as the other states, which have twice our population. I mean, there are some questions we have to get answered there. And I think part of the issues, and I think part of Judge Bonaventura's frustration was some fiscal restraints put on her after they found that the budget was blown in that department, okay? And I'm not saying anything bad about her.
Additional funds.
Yeah,
yeah.
$600 million additional in this budget.
I think trying to get a grasp on that, finding that the budget was out of control, it seemed in people's eyes, from a person who loves children and who I respect greatly, that's not the issue. Her skills and everything aside, I think it was a fiscal issue, and we do need to understand that as well. And I think that's where she was frustrated most, but time will tell as this report comes out.
So, we couldn't devote a whole show to this.
This is really the governor's first big test, right? Yeah. He's had pretty smooth sailing for the last
Well, and the margin of error is, and any child that's even tangentially connected to malfeasance, but neglect at this level will bring a bright, hot light. Before we get off the subject of drugs completely, some people, including the American Legion, are saying one way to help us out here is to let us have medical marijuana.
Right.
We've had rallies.
Yes.
Is that high on your agenda?
I
advise you not to answer that question.
Yeah. I'll take the fifth on that. But we've had a member of our caucus, Senator Talian, who has for I don't know how many sessions now had bills in regards to medical marijuana and medical marijuana or marijuana reform measures. I'm glad to see that now there are members of the majority party who are following suit with Senator Talian and the lead that she's taken over the years on this. I think it's time to have a hard look at what are reasonable medical marijuana reforms that could be taken. And when you have the veterans groups that are coming on board now and saying they think there's a need for this, I mean, there's some people with credibility.
So we need all the information
any
here.
Right.
Well, for legalizing medical marijuana, no. To studying it, honestly, I think it's probably time that we can get a hard look from the medical perspective. If this is a medical issue, I want to hear medical experts on it. We need to talk about the societal benefits and detriments that are happening in other states. And Matt Lehman, our floor leader, will be introducing a bill today, filing a bill today, asking for a study on it. So I think it's appropriate, and we need the information before we really consider any type of legislation.
Well, what about the more pressing issue, some would say, of the confusion over cannabis oil, which has very low THC? It's apparently doesn't get people high, but it was approved last year by you all and signed by the governor as a treatment for those with epilepsy. You're going to try to correct that this?
Yeah, I think there'll be measures put through the legislature to try to correct that. I don't think the leadership on either side, I can't speak for them, but I think they're open to that as we move forward, and that needs to be done. Obviously, it was supported in the last legislative session. Everyone thought it was done correctly, and there's they found a little problem, and we'll come back and fix it.
So you say this is a technical correction?
Is, but there's a bigger issue, too, and that is that this does not appear to have any hallucinogenic effects.
Right.
There are anecdotal stories everywhere now about people getting help from this. I had someone tell me that their pastor called them and said, I've been using this for years. I have a horrible back, and it works.
Yeah.
And am I breaking the law? And so it's a... this is something we need to look at.
But then I don't want to suggest that. I don't want you to say that. You're already
everybody was happy.
Well, our own former state health commissioner, just this last week, Feldman, had a letter in the Indianapolis Star. This is no different than any other homeopathic remedy, as long as it doesn't have a high THC content.
That's right, and that's the key issue. And there are arguments now that you can get the CBD oil without any THC in it whatsoever. So we'll see how this all plays out. But I think we're going to move on the problem that we had with the Attorney General.
We have to avoid having the Prosecuting Attorneys Association come in and try to confuse this issue, because I really feel like that is what happened last year. We just need to legalize this low-dose THC substance, which seems to help some people, including children with intractable seizure disorders, and be done with it.
And I'm getting a signal we're almost out of time, but as long as we're on the subject of intoxicants, cold beer versus Sunday sales.
I love buying cold beer on Saturday. I'm kidding. Our hope is to have a Sunday sales bill.
And that
clean.
Was the agreement effectively that
it's
came
Senate
out
Bill
of the,
1
study.
In the Senate. It's 1051, I think, in the House.
So, we might have Sunday sales, but cold beer is another matter, I'm guessing.
John, it's going to be an exciting session. We're going to talk about marijuana and cold beer.
The ability to carry handguns without a permit.
No.
Now, is that
which
I know
all go
I'm
together,
getting all
so
the list of things you probably would or not on anybody's agenda, but constitutional carry. I mean, that was it was an issue that you studied. You just talked about the need to study issues. That was studied. Both sides kind of claimed victory about whether you want to make what came out of it was you want to maintain, or that commission wanted to maintain, the same licensing infrastructure, but at the same time give people the ability to carry. It's hard to reconcile the two, but do we see that as an issue that gets much traction?
Quite frankly, I think that is a solution in search of a problem. I think that the ability to get a permit to carry now is fully available. I don't think it's overly burdensome, and so I think we have far more important issues we need to be considering.
And it's probably your constituents, perhaps, that might be more interested in this. Are you willing to give it a look-see this session?
My hope is that public safety will come on board with this. As long as our public safety officers are opposed to it, it's difficult. It's difficult to do because those are the most important people. I know there's some discussion about removing the fee from the permit. I'm open to that, certainly. This is also complicated by the federal move to have reciprocity for permits. I suspect, in fact, I know, there are some lifetime permits sitting right here. And if there's going to be reciprocity in other states, I'm going to rely on that permit so that I can carry elsewhere.
Likewise.
Redistricting. I thought we were out of time, but all right. We might as well go for one more hot-button issue. Now I'm getting a rap signal. You guys may be off the hook on this one. I know you want it.
That was part of your agenda.
It's probably too big a haul for this.
We passed it in the House twice. I'm a personal supporter. I will tell you today. That I don't know that the House Republican Caucus, a majority, would support it. I mean, just minds have changed on it, and the experience in the 11 states that have it is mixed, honestly mixed. So it's tough in a short session.
I'm guessing nothing
especially.
Is going to change in the Senate since that was a holdup in the past.
We'll see. Time will tell. There's a couple of bills that have been filed and by Republicans, so we'll see what there. But the bills are different. Senator Landon's filed one. There's an issue of the Constitution. The legislature must draw the districts. It's very unequivocal about that. So what does that mean? Do you have to amend the Constitution or not? We have to debate on that. Did people say yes or no?
Time will tell. Well, you have a deadline of March 14th. I have a deadline with people saying I got to go right now. So again, I certainly appreciate your willingness to continue the tradition. Again, my guests have been House Speaker Brian Bosma of Indianapolis, House Minority Leader Terry Gooden of Austin, Senate President Pro Tem David Long of Fort Wayne, and Senate Minority Leader Tim Lannon of Anderson. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, our annual State of the State Week visit with Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb. And time now for one of my favorite parts of the show, our weekly debrief with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, now part of Hanna News Service. Well, Ed, I could have gone on with another half dozen topics during the roundtable, and that tells me that there is no Goliath issue this session. This is the session of lots of little issues competing for time and attention. Is that right?
No overarching focus this session, John, and that's going to be problematic. You know, the governor would like to focus on workforce development, career pathways, career and technical education, those types of things, consolidating a bunch of the workforce development agencies and their budgets and getting things on track to building the workforce of the future and training it. But legislators are a little bit reluctant to do all that work in this short session. Speaker Bosma has talked about nibbling at the edges because it's just too big a task. And when you've got a situation like that where you've got the one thing that the governor wants to focus on and the leaders would like to do but can't really get done, you've got a vacuum of sorts. And politics abhors a vacuum, and you're going to have the opportunity for all these individual legislators to bring up a series of controversial issues that leaders may not want on the table, and then the ones that they can't ignore, such as the alcohol regulation.
They tend to get the headlines and the reporters' questions and whatnot. When you say nibbling at the edges, I mean, what can there be some advance on the economic development or workforce development front without having the kind of consolidation the governor wants?
Oh, there can certainly be, and you can look at career pathways as one area that they can get into in this particular session and do something on. But I think
this is a new route for graduating high schoolers to enter
the path in education and starting them early and keeping them on a track through, you know, essentially elementary school through college, and then doing some adult ed on top of that. But at the same time, I think what you're looking at is really educating the legislators this session on what needs to be done in the next budget session with respect to this, because it really is a large task.
So any surprises in the State of the State coming up? Or have we seen the agenda that we're going to find out? We've seen the goods.
The governor wants everybody on task on this career and technical education and pathways to the future.
Very good, Ed. We'll have to leave it there, but we look forward to continuing the conversation throughout the rest of the session. Appreciate it. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and my colleague Ed Feigenbaum, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more on what promises to be a very interesting legislative session. Until next week, take care.
Purdue researchers are finding new ways to treat cancer, provide drug-free therapies, advance wound repairs, reduce chronic illness symptoms, helping people, changing lives. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.